First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springston Show, brought to you by the MBM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringston.com, where you can go to for all the latest news and issues we're covering. While you're at one of those websites, please join the email newsletter. That way all our stories will get sent direct to your inbox on a weekly or monthly schedule, as you prefer. Additionally, join the RSS feed, and we'll make sure you get a notice of the radio show each and every day. And you can listen to all the latest podcasts or anything else if you're not listening live. And while you're there, if you're so inclined, hit that little handy-dandy donate button there on the right side. Donations help us keep everything going. Pays for the cost, so we always ask and hope for the best. For you guys that are new to the show, call-in numbers, as always, 858-683-1326. Or 502-805-0334. Additionally, for you guys that are in the listening queue, please hit the number 1 on your dial pad, and we'll get with you as soon as we can bring you on air. And finally, the chat room is open, so if you'd like to get inside the chat room, make your opinions heard, you're more than happy to, or free to do so. And you can also sign in using your Facebook and Twitter accounts as well. I tell you, there is never any shortage of news going on. We are going to spend some time tonight on what's going on in St. Louis. We're going to spend some time tonight on Eric Holder, racist Attorney General Eric Holder. We should get to Barack Obama just a little bit and see where we go from there. In the meantime, we're going to tell our own story tonight. Yep, you guessed it. We're going to talk about one of our own stories to start with here in Louisville. As everybody in Louisville knows by now, or should know, Mayor Greg Fisher has been sued by Jay Morgan in a civil lawsuit. It's a private lawsuit against Greg Fisher himself, not in his capacity as mayor, and the lawsuit is for defamation of character against Jay Morgan. This was actually filed December 2013. We've reported on a lot of the reasons behind this, starting with our West Side story at Louisville Politics, and there is links at the website to that within this story as well. What was fascinating about this and why it's become a relevant story again is because of Greg Fisher and Mike O'Connell. This is a private lawsuit. So if I were to sue you as an individual, not in any official capacity, you would be forced to take care of your legal fees and everything else out of your own pocket. That would be normal. Greg Fisher is being sued as an individual, and yet our county attorney, Michael Connell, and his staff are the ones doing the legal work. Our taxpayer resources are going to defend Greg Fisher because he happens to be mayor of Louisville, even though this lawsuit has absolutely nothing to do with his capacity as mayor of Louisville. So why is Michael Connell's office wasting our money trying to defend Greg Fisher like this is totally beyond me.
Hit me harder than what I realized. Hey, Ed. You're not coming over the airwaves.
Guess what? Welcome. Welcome to the show, folks. I apologize. You had just had about 5 minutes of dead air due to an idiotic move on my part. I had a mic that accidentally came up and I didn't even see it. Thanks to our good friend Paul over at Stop It, who happens to be on air with us right now. How are you, Paul?
We're rolling along the south side of the county, man.
Well, I sure thank you for calling in and letting me know that, man, because I'm just sitting here rambling, didn't even see it. I just went and pulled a connection when you said something, and lo and behold, there it is. So thanks for pointing out the mic problem. For you guys that are new to the show, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334 are the numbers. For those of you that are listening to you can do as our good friend Paul has and hit the number 1 on your dial pad, and we'll get with you on air as soon as possible. And as always, the chat room is open, so if you want to get onto the chat room, please feel free to do so. You can sign in using Facebook and the Twitter accounts as well. I started the show, and we'll go ahead and get right back into it. Right now in Louisville, we're going to start the show with this story. This is one of my stories, ongoing stories, and then we're going to move on to what's going on in St. Louis. And every problem in the world is going on there, including the racist air holder being there now, trying to force the situation to go his way. We'll get into a lot of that, and probably Barack Obama as well. But here in Louisville, we've got an interesting story as well. Mayor Greg Fisher was sued back in December of 2013. A lawsuit was filed by Jay Morgan. Jay Morgan sued Mayor Fisher as an individual. He did not sue Mayor Fisher as the mayor. He did not sue him in any official capacity with his job title whatsoever. He sued Greg Fisher, the man, for defamation of character. What's interesting and why this story has become back around today is because for the third time, Greg Fisher has filed to have the lawsuit dismissed. The first two times they filed for basically the same reasons, all three times. The first two times he filed to dismiss the lawsuit, the Honorable Judge Mitch Perry ruled against him, said the lawsuit was going forward. He wasn't going to dismiss this case. Now they're trying for the third time. The reason I find this so startling, and Paul, you can jump in if you want to. You're more than free to. But the reason I find this so disturbing is County Attorney Mike O'Connell and his office are the ones who are representing Greg Fisher in this case. And the reason that's disturbing to me is I get it. If Greg Fisher is sued in his official capacity as mayor, I get it. The county attorney has to represent him. I understand that. But explain to me how the taxpayers became the burden of the financial backing for an individual, regardless of their status or their title, to have unlimited funds available to them for their own personal defense. And that's exactly what Greg Fisher is doing by using County Attorney Michael Connell's office. And Michael Connell knows this and is allowing it anyway. I'm trying to figure out how in the world they can justify this behavior and a waste of our money and resources. If I was Honorable Judge Mitch Perry, I would be so angry and pissed off right now and offended at such a blatant waste of his time, the court's resources, especially after ruling against these clowns twice. And as a private citizen, I'm going to be looking into if there is an ethical violation here as well, because I don't understand how the county attorney's office can be used to defend Greg Fisher or anyone else in a private, personal lawsuit, not an official one.
Well,
the
answer to this particular issue, as well as a lot of issues that we face here in the country today, is that there's a relatively small number of people who are actually in control of government. And I've seen a term make it into the print media these days. They call it the ruling elite, and that's a term I've been using for quite a number of years.
Yep.
And I agree with that.
Yep.
The ruling elite are in charge of our government, and they believe that they're entitled to be in charge because they're special. So when a person thinks that they're special, they also believe that the rules don't apply to them because they are special. And that's the attitude that I think we have that government operations these days, top to bottom. You've reported on a number of the Metro Council people. You've reported on the county attorney's office, the Metropolitan Sewer District, the building code enforcement people. They all always think that they're special and that the rules don't apply to them. And that governs their behavior. So I sent you a photograph today of somebody else who thought that they were special, and that is some of the people who are supporting one of the Senate candidates who decided that it's okay to place their campaign signs on church property. Oh, wait a minute. A church is a tax-exempt organization, and the IRS rules explicitly say that they're not supposed to be involved in political campaigns. But see, that's the mentality. That's the mentality as to why Fisher and crew behave the way they do. They believe they're special. The rules don't apply to them. But yet, and by the way, and they're the ones that make the rules. Think about that, Ed. The ruling elite makes the rules not for the population's benefit at large. No, no, no. It's for their own protection and or edification. So,
well, there's no doubt about that. Well, there's no doubt about that. What really makes this interesting to me, though, is because I equate this to some degree, and bear with me for a second, but I equate this to some degree as equal, at minimum, to the charges that got Judy Greene impeached and got within one vote of impeaching Councilwoman Barbara Shanklin. And the reason both of those people came up on ethics charges was they were basically redirecting taxpayer money for their own benefit. I mean, in a nutshell, that's it. So when you look at this, isn't this exactly what the mayor himself is doing, redirecting taxpayer money for his own benefit? Because this is a personal, private lawsuit. It has nothing to do with his official capacity. So I think there is an ethical challenge here to be made, and I'll file it myself if I need to, but I'm going to check it out and make sure. But this is very disturbing to me, and quite frankly, you know, I have to start asking myself questions. Why would they open themselves up to this scrutiny? Why are they delaying this court case intentionally? Because they know the judge is going to rule against them a third time. They're intentionally pissing off the judge. I mean, there's no other way to describe this. So why would they go down this road? And the only thing I can come up with is Greg Fisher would have to testify under oath and depositions and everything else if this thing goes forward. And when he has to testify under oath, Greg Fisher is going to have some serious problems because, one, he's either going to lie, and we can prove it'll be perjury. There's plenty of evidence for me I've got available to prove if he lies about any of the things we've charged him with so far. And, two, if he doesn't lie, then he has to admit that perhaps he may have a serious situation in favoring his sister or even racism. And I tell you why I say that, because, you know, this whole thing started over this workplace training facility that's outlined in the West Side Story articles that you can link part one and part two. I just put a link to my story in the chat room. You can link to those two parts of the story. But, you know, this is very serious because the West Side Story, essentially, Greg Fisher jumped on board, wanted to get this workforce training facility in place. Okay, J. Morgan presented this plan. Greg Fisher actually suggested bringing Simmons College into this partnership and was on board with the location at 8th and Kentucky in the West End. You know, and this was all going to be a great program that the feds were going to fund. There was millions of dollars on the table that was arranged for grant funding for this thing to go forward. But miraculously, in July of 2012, everything was a go, and within a couple of months, everything changed overnight. It became a nightmare. In July of 2012, after everything came out about the Simmons JCT partnership, according to Morgan's allegations in his complaint, one of Ford's experts that was at a workforce training convention, well, they were referring to Simmons College on that particular aspect. So Fisher pulls a plug just a couple months later, takes this completely out of the West End with full federal funding, not one dime of local money, folks. Think about that, all right? And he gave his sister, Lynn, who is the CEO of her own private worker training firm called Catalyst Learning Center, and she's also the CEO or chairman or whatever, JCTC. And so now she's got this contract. They're going to build this in the East End now, take it completely out of the West End where all the federal grant money was available, and they've went to the state to fund it. So now the people of Louisville and Kentucky are going to fund this. And what's really alarming here, Paul, is this mayor turned down tens of millions of dollars for this project, so it was going to be free to us in a union town. We were going to be able to train workers to make real wages. We continually talk about living wages, and all they want to do is put up new McDonald's or Walmarts and bring these low-wage economy, minimum wage-scale jobs in here. We had the perfect opportunity to train a workforce to make more money, to provide for themselves. It was not going to cost us a dime. And Fisher pulled the plug to give this to the East End white communities on behalf of his sister Lynn. Now, this is the backstory to all of that, okay? And the other part of that backstory is simple. Then he goes on and gives Walmart $50 million to build a building in the West End full of minimum wage jobs that the residents don't want. So, you know, he's taking $50 million of our dollars, Louisville tax money, to give to a company that pays minimum wage rather than getting free money to train people to be a better workforce and make more money. That's the backstory. Now, how did this lead to a lawsuit by J. Morgan? J. Morgan was terminated by Ford Motor Company. There's a confidential settlement there. I can't get you any information on it. Jay did come to an agreement with Ford, and that he would not sue Ford or for anything at all. So whatever their non-disclosure, he's got a non-disclosure agreement and a confidential settlement. I can't get to it. Okay? Nobody can. So what makes this interesting, though, is from what I can understand from the complaint and what I'm putting together from the complaint itself, and I outlined all of this months and months ago, Greg Fisher lied to Ford Motor Company about J. Morgan. And when he lied to Ford Motor Company, it was part of the basis for his termination from Ford. So he defamed Jay's character. He lost his job at Ford. This is in a complaint. So when you look at all of this and everything else, this is what brought Morgan around to suing Greg Fisher. So this is clearly a case built against Greg Fisher on a personal level for defamation of character. How is this any different than Judy Greene and Barbara Shanklin, Paul?
Greg's special.
Greg's special. The top Democrat in town, yeah.
No, well, he's the top elected Democrat in town, but he's
right.
Special, and so therefore we have a different set of rules that applies to him.
Right.
At least
well,
that's the way they do what they do, you know?
And I think you're right. You know, Fisher was 100% behind the location of West Louisville. He's the one that suggested Simmons College. He did this intentionally. He even made the comments that this was going to help his reelection. Of course it was, because he was going to get the West End black vote, which is what he wanted. And then he pulled it for some reason to give it to his sister. You know, there's too many things here to add up. And the fact that the county attorney is involved in this, and our taxpayer resources are involved in this for a multimillionaire like a Greg Fisher, that's disturbing to me. You know, as you know, Jerry Abramson was outed. He did not run or take a chance on running for his final shot at mayor for the last 4 years, largely because he got caught describing the city of Louisville as poorer, blacker, and older. So I'm wondering, you know, that many people believe, including myself, we were the ones that reported it. The information came from elsewhere. But, you know, I am curious, you know, maybe that's in their mindset right now. Jerry basically ran out of town, and I believe that's why. And if that's the case, then that's why he doesn't want to go under oath. But the reality is, if he goes under oath right now and says anything, tells the truth under oath about the conversations that were going on, then he's done politically. He's done. And if that happens before the November election, guess what? Then you have a real mayor's election. You'll have somebody else put up for that spot. You know, you're not going to have this garbage you've got right now. So it's an interesting paradox. And then, of course, we've reported that rumor has it, and, you know, if it's true, it's true. If it's not, it's not. But rumor has it that Michael Connell is looking to resign from office after the election. Now, when that takes place, I don't know. Rumor also has it that Pat Mulvihill, who was moved into the county attorney's office specifically to work on this case, that we've been told anyway, whether it's true or not, I don't know. But a lot of things add up to that. Michael Connell got his job in 2008, if you recall, by being appointed to that job once the election was over and somebody else resigned, his predecessor resigned. And that's the game plan for Michael Connell, because if he resigns after the election, then who gets to appoint his successor? And if he's forced to resign before the election, then we have a real election, don't we?
We have the potential for a real election.
Right. So there's a lot of variables here. You can look at it any way you want to. I'm definitely checking out the ethical consideration on this and taking it from there and see what happens. But we are definitely going to be following through on this. So stay tuned, folks. Go to LouisvillePolitics.com. Check out today's story. We put a couple of stories out this week I think you're going to find very interesting. And, you know, don't forget while you're there to join the email newsletter and RSS feed. Moving on, I tell you, Paul, if you want to stick around, I'll leave your mic open. Moving on, we've been talking a lot this week about what's going on in St. Louis. Darren Wilson, the police officer who shot Michael Brown in the middle of the street, has been chastised. You now have the governor going out and telling the whole world that he needs to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and he decides to do this when Eric Holder comes into town. Now, you wonder why this sudden change of heart, right? This governor is talking about let's do the investigation, blah, 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 and now he's calling for the vigorous prosecution of this white police officer who shot a black man, you know. It's crazy. Jay Nixon, the governor of Missouri, you know, has decided to do this at the same time Eric Holder comes into town. I don't find that coincidental, not one bit. Nixon has been rumored to be one of the top choices for Hillary Clinton's vice president in the 2016 presidential election. I think this Missouri case definitely screwed that up. At least we can hope so. But what's not being reported widely, and what mainstream media didn't want to tell anybody from the beginning, Paul, and this is very disturbing, you know, Officer Wilson, according to reports, suffered some severe facial injuries. He has a fracture of his orbital fracture, which is his eye socket. He was beaten nearly unconscious by Michael Brown while he sat in his car moments before he got out to confront Mike Brown. This guy takes a beating, gets out, tells Brown to stop. According to reports we're getting, Brown turns around, faces the cop, says, "What are you going to do, shoot me?" And then bum rushes the cop, who just had the literal shit kicked out of him, sitting in his damn car through his window. And all of a sudden, he is this white cop murdering a black guy. But the mainstream media doesn't want to report this. The only one who's had the guts to report this is Fox News. Whether you like the source or not, it's a legitimate story. Paul, what does this tell us?
Well, first of all, Ed, did in reporting the injuries allegedly sustained by the cop, did they release any photographs of the man's face?
No, they haven't, not yet. All we've got are the medical reports. I mean, the medical reports are saying this, and they're going to release all that next week, from what I understand.
I have to wonder, you know, one of the best ways to quell misinformation is to put the correct information out and just let the new information take its course. I have to wonder, Ed, one of the primary defenses for the cop is what you just stated, that he claims that he was assaulted by the now deceased Michael Brown,
right,
and that he suffered injuries. Well, forgive me, but I must be from Missouri, and that is, I've got to be shown something, okay? And
right.
Missouri is in fact the show me state. So my question is, why aren't they showing the facial injuries that you know they had to take photographs? You know that all the powers that be out there had to insist on complete photographs of any and all injuries sustained by the officer, as well as complete and thorough examinations and documentation of all of this, because you know that they knew that all hell was breaking loose there in Ferguson. They have to know these things. So, Ed, give me your best speculation as to why they're sitting on this information. Why are they sitting on the photographs?
You know, I'm not even sure that it's them just sitting on it. Maybe mainstream media is. And I'm not trying to – and I know I'm playing devil's advocate there, and it's really not what I'm trying to do. But from the very beginning of this, I agree with you that all the facts should have been presented at the same time. But mainstream media decided to turn this into a white rogue cop shooting a black male in the street. Hold on a second. That's the way this whole story started.
The mainstream media is doing this for what reason? Are they following a script handed to them by perchance?
Oh, I agree. No, I'm in total agreement with you there. That's where I'm headed.
It's already been reported that the Obama administration has meddled at the very earliest stages of this whole situation into the affairs of the local and state authorities. So, Ed, who is preventing the release of the photographs of the injured officer?
That's exactly where I was heading. Maybe mainstream media is not releasing these because they're being told not to. Because from the very beginning of this, it's been portrayed, again, as this rogue white police officer shooting this poor innocent. And at first they kept saying teenager child. Then they started saying teenage youth. And now they're finally admitting this is an 18-year-old man. And he's 6'4", 280 pounds plus. So, yeah. You know, this is a serious situation. And what's really interesting here, too, is Dorian Johnson, the so-called friend of his that was with him that told the whole world this lie that this officer just shot him for no reason, is now actually changing his story and starting to tell a different story that matches exactly what the officers said in the beginning, that he was attacked inside his car. So, you know, now all of a sudden this friend who lied to the media in the first place that has totally destroyed Ferguson, Missouri, is now changing his story and agreeing with the cop. And there was also some other questions that have been raised in this about dashboard and body cameras. According to what's being reported now, this Ferguson just recently, got started getting the dash and body cameras in. They had already been ordered by Police Chief Thomas Jackson, but they had just got there, and they hadn't been assigned yet. So those weren't out there because they weren't available to be out there yet. So we don't have the dash cams, and we don't have that video. We don't have the other video that we want, because we just didn't have the body cameras and stuff available. You know, so we've got all this going on. And as far as the videotape of Mike Brown and the robbery and the convenience store, you know, where everybody saw him push the manager to place against a thing where they stole $50 worth of Swisher Sweet cigars. And let's be real here, folks. Let's call it like it is. Swisher Sweet cigars are known to anybody who smokes blunts. That's one of your preferred cigars. You empty all the tobacco out of it, you fill it up with weed. All right, that's what you do with it. That's a blunt. So, yeah, there's no doubt that's what it was for in my mind. But, you know, hey, it wasn't there, right? But it's interesting because everybody is screaming, why did the police chief release this video a week later of Michael Brown ripping off this convenience store? It was an intentional thing to disparage Mike Brown's character and promote the black man as being some kind of a renegade thief, which had nothing to do with him being killed. Well, that's not exactly true. The truth is the Freedom of Information Act tells you you have to report stuff. There were numerous Freedom of Information Act requests by the media for all the files and information they had. You know, in most cases, the Freedom of Information Act requires you to respond or release within 3 to 7 days. Would you agree with that, Paul?
In most cases? That's the way most of them. Yeah,
right.
That's the way most of these laws are written. No question
exactly.
about it. But
so,
Michael
Tom
Brown,
Jackson waited to release for a week. Well, the point is here, he released 1 week later. According to what we're being told, he was not going to release it. He waited as long as he possibly could legally to release it. But once he was out of legal options to hold that back because of the Freedom of Information request, that's why it was released. But the public wasn't told that. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, this whole situation where they want to tie everything together, even though it isn't necessarily tieable. For example, the fact that Michael Brown was videotaped in the commission of a robbery, and Michael Brown then just had the unfortunate circumstance of having copped an attitude, and he might even been under the influence of one of the drugs. He might have been, although I thought marijuana is supposed to mellow you out. Maybe he was on something else, but he goes out
well,
to the street after he ripped off.
These days. Go ahead.
Maybe he, after he left that establishment, he was behaving in a way that the cops said something's wrong here and went to check it out. And Michael Brown, having a guilty conscience, decided to double down. You know, he's going to double down. Not because Michael Brown thought that the cop knew. He thought that the cop knew that he just ripped off a store.
Well, that's exactly it.
And the cop didn't. The cop didn't know. I think, and that's just common sense based on everything that's been published so far. Michael Brown thought the cop knew he had committed a crime, but the cop didn't know that Michael Brown had committed any crime. He was making a stop because the cops suspected something was amiss.
Well, what's happening was real clear. I mean, the cop, you know, told the guys to get out of the middle of the street. They were walking down
Bingo.
The middle of the street.
There you go.
Okay,
there
and
go.
Then
and
when
see,
he was
proof.
Driving away, right, he was driving away,
yeah.
They decided to be a smartass, which has already been reported, that they mouthed off to the cop, so he backed up to say something to him, and before he could even get out of his car, as soon as he opened his door is when Mike Brown decided to slam the door shut on him. He tried to get out again. The second time he tried to get out, this is according to the real eyewitness accounts, and there's more than one, okay? According to everything they're piecing together now, Brown slammed the door shut on him again and then, you know, put his upper body through the window and started pounding the hell out of the cop. At the same time he pounded the hell out of the cop, he reached for the gun.
Let's see
and
the
that gun went off. Well, we're not going to be able to prove it. But that's, you know,
no,
one of them.
No, let's see the photographs. Let's see the photographs of the cop and his injuries. Let's see the photographs. I'm from Missouri
sure
on this issue, Ed. I want to
oh,
see
no,
the
no,
photographs.
No, I agree with
and,
you there.
And remember, if Fox News is reporting the story but isn't releasing any photographs, to me, like maybe Fox News hasn't gotten any photographs either. What do you think?
Well, considering that the police chief you know, held back on the Freedom of Information Act request as long as he could. You know, maybe he hasn't had the Freedom of Information Act request until today or yesterday, because that's when most of that is coming out. Now that it's coming out, it was first reported yesterday, so maybe it'll be next week. That's what I'm saying. Next week, I will look to have that information. But even without the pitchers, and I'm going to play the advocate here, I know, but even without the pitchers, eyewitness accounts and audio testimony from a film, a guy was filming this on his camera after Mike Brown was shot, and you have witness testimony going on in the background that this guy didn't even realize he was recording. Two guys talking about the shooting and one explaining exactly what we've just said. And this falls in line with the other witnesses and now falls in line with Mike Brown's friend, who is changing his story to match all the other information. You know, on top of all of this, you know, as if Mike Brown getting shot in the middle of the street wasn't bad enough, it was because of his own poor choices that led to that, in my opinion. But on top of all of this, we've had all these riots and looting and everything else going on, and everybody's wondering why Ferguson is tearing up their own town. Well, as we have been reporting from the beginning, Paul, and you even chimed in with this the other night the same way because you were on air the other night with us talking about it, we finally got some numbers to back that up. Since Michael Brown was killed in the street, there's been 163 arrests, from all of the stuff going on, from all the protesters. There's been a total of 163 arrests. This is through yesterday, I believe it was. No, it's through this morning. 163 arrests. And guess how many live there? Out of 163 arrests, only 7 people that live there were arrested. The majority of these people are coming from all over the country. Some are in communities that are near Ferguson, but most are coming from all over the country. Only 7 people arrested out of 163 are from Ferguson. Does that not back up what we've been saying all along?
Yes. Yep. And again, it goes back to a very fundamental piece of logic. People who live in a community generally don't want to tear up their own community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that these stats back that up, is that the people of Ferguson, they didn't want to tear up their community. They didn't want to create problems for their innocent friends and neighbors. They want justice, but they don't want to go and extract justice by terrorizing and robbing and stealing and looting and burning property of people who weren't even involved. That's the normal community reaction. But outsiders come in, what have they got to lose? They've got no skin in the game. They can go
exactly.
in there and create all kinds of havoc and exact all kinds of punishment upon people who are innocent. And to them, it's no big deal because they know they're going to be leaving one day in the near future.
Exactly. And miraculously, this is less than a week and a half old, folks. Miraculously, yesterday, coinciding with Eric Holder's arrival in Ferguson, Missouri, a grand jury started looking at the evidence to determine whether they're going to charge Darren Wilson, the officer, with any charges. You tell me this isn't a predetermined case. This officer is going to be hung out to dry, whether he was right or wrong. There's no doubt about it. But we convene a grand jury the same day that the racist U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder shows up on behalf of the Obama administration. We've got a gag-on Governor Nixon sitting out there changing his tune and requiring and demanding a vigorous prosecution against this officer we haven't even heard evidence yet. All we have is
what political party
reports.
Is Governor Nixon?
They're all Democrats. Nixon was on the short list to become Hillary Clinton's vice president candidate in 2016. So he's trying to save himself is all he's doing. And on top of all this, now we've got Eric Holder showing up. And what's one of the first things he does? He talks to college students yesterday in St. Louis, right down the road from where Mike Brown was shot at. And the first thing he wants to tell everybody is the change is coming. Change is coming. So what does that mean? Who knows? Because he goes on to tell the whole world he's not just the attorney general, but he's a black man too. And then he meets with members of the community, and then he goes in there and starts throwing racism out there again. He starts telling a story about when he was young, that he has been a victim of profiling by the police. He was stopped on the New Jersey Turnpike on 2 occasions and accused of speeding. And when he was pulled over, they asked to search his car, and they searched his car and everything else. And it was humiliating, and he was angry at the impact it had on him. Well, guess what, Eric Holder? That's just promoting more race, because guess what? My white son was treated the same way by at least one black officer Was it a racial incident? I don't think so. And you know who got arrested? I got arrested for saying, sir, that's my son. Can I please have your name in case he gets arrested so that I'll know what to do? And they arrested me. So Eric Holder is out there promoting more racism, and it really should not surprise us much, because as we've been going along today and doing more research, I'm finding more and more stuff against Eric Holder that, quite frankly, I never looked into before. Eric Holder is there saying that he's looking for possible violations of federal civil rights statutes. Let's see. We already have him saying that he's a black man, not just the attorney general. Change is coming. Wants to sit there and give us this poor story about poor Eric Holder being racially profiled for getting his car searched by being pulled over speeding. Happens to white people every day by black officers. I've been a victim of two black officers. Only once was I arrested for it, and that was just for asking a name. You know, you throw all of these things into there. You know, we've had two autopsies already. One by somebody that was supposed to be a so-called expert, we now find out wasn't even qualified. He's not a medical examiner, never has been. The other was done by a very well-respected autopsy professional, 80 years old, out of New York, who's done over 20,000 autopsies, and he's the one that has the legitimate report who told us all the shots came from the front. You know, and we've got all this stuff going, but Eric Holder has to have a third autopsy. So we convene a grand jury immediately as soon as he shows up. We haven't even stopped the daggone rioting yet, but we have to convene a grand jury. He goes around telling the whole world he's black, so like we didn't know that. And then we've got a governor who changes his tune overnight and now demands a vigorous prosecution of this white officer. You tell me the fix isn't in?
I thought Eric Holder was in town to make sure that a person's civil rights hasn't been trampled on. Does that include the cop?
There you go. No. Eric Holder is nothing more. Eric Holder is nothing more than a powerful Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. There's not a doubt in my mind. He's a race baiter. And this goes all the way back to the 70s, which is where the rest of my research came in today. And before I go there, I mean, let's look at this, too. As we all know, Missouri Highway Patrol Captain Ron Johnson has taken over and been put in charge of security. All right, Ron Johnson happens to be black, but Ron Johnson has done a damn good job, as far as I'm concerned, with being tasked with that kind of responsibility in such a volatile situation. But Eric Holder, of course, walks up to him, "My man, you the man." And then starts calling Captain Johnson his brother. You know, "That's my brother." You know, all this stuff, you know, the black street lingo, right? This is the top law enforcement person in the land, making racism front and center for the whole world to see. And we wonder why we have racists in this country. And this is very disturbing. But here's where research led me. I decided to go back a ways, and I came across an article by thedailycaller.com, and I'm going to post this in the chat room for you guys. Paul, if you'd like, I'll send it to you in a separate email, because I know you like to get this stuff sometimes. But it's in the chat room now for those of you guys who are in there. But as a freshman at Columbia University in 1970, Eric Holder participated in an armed, you heard me right, in an armed five-day occupation of a Naval Reserve Officer Training Corps in ROTC headquarters with a group of black students that were described by the Black Students Organization as armed. This isn't some white guy saying they were armed. This is the Black Students Organization that said Eric Holder was one of these group of black students who did this five-day occupation of ROTC headquarters. You know, the Department of Justice, this was reported in 2012. I missed it 2 years ago. I apologize to my listening audience. So, you know, and he laughs about it. He goes on and he admits that he did it today. He swears up and down he was a senior. But the truth is he was a freshman. So he was a troublemaker then. You know, so this group of black radicals decided they were going to hold this place hostage unless they renamed the lounge the Malcolm X Lounge, and they ended up renaming it the Malcolm X Lounge to appease them. The dean at that time, Carl Hovde, said that the occupation of the ROT office was definitely illegal. It violated all university policy, but they declined to prosecute any of them. Now, why did they decline to prosecute any of these guys in 1970? Well, when he did this stuff. Well, I can give you a couple of reasons why. One, because in 1970, everybody was scared to blame the black man for anything. We had just went through mass assassinations. We'd lost Martin Luther King Jr. We'd lost Bobby Kennedy. We'd lost JFK in the previous 7 years. All these people stood up for civil rights. So everybody was scared to be labeled. It started, this PC correct bullshit started back then. It just led to where we are today. That was a birth child of it. But at the same time, you also had a big confrontation between police and Columbia College, the Columbia University, between the police and the members of this society, the Black Student Society. It was called Students for a Democratic Society, less than 2 years earlier, in 1968. They had already had a major thing happen there. So they were scared to take any action about it. So they got what they wanted. And Eric Holder now claims that they decided to peacefully occupy one of the campus offices, which was a lie. They were armed inside the ROTC, and then, they actually went and took over one office there as well. So, armed black militants, and this is a guy in charge of the law in the United States of America. Now, I understand it was 44 years ago, and I'll get to why that's a problem for me in just a second. Go ahead, Paul. I know you're dying.
It goes back to what I said at the top of the show. These people are special. The rules don't apply to them. It really is just that simple. It's that simple.
I think you're absolutely right. Now, there's a reason I brought all this background in, going all the way back to 1970, and I tell you why. Because there is a big, big push on to make the district attorney, Bob McCulloch, they are trying to force him to get a special prosecutor involved in this case with the grand jury. Spokesman for the St. Louis County Prosecutor, Bob McCulloch, said there was no timeline for the process. It's probably going to take weeks for the grand jury to decide what's going on. Thank goodness for that, because we'll have time for all this crap to die down just a little bit. But it's interesting because the whole world is now claiming Bob McCulloch can't be impartial because his father, mother, brother, uncle, and cousin all worked for the St. Louis Police Department at one time, but his dad was killed while he was a cop by a black suspect. So Bob McCulloch can't be impartial because his dad was killed by a black suspect 50 years ago, 5-0. So they're saying he can't be impartial because 50 years ago, his white father, who was a cop, was killed by a black suspect. The same fate that Officer Darren Wilson faced that day he shot Mike Brown. So because he's white and something happened 50 years ago, he can't be impartial. So somebody explain to me how in the hell that could be made as anything, any kind of a meaningful statement that has any basis in reality at all when Eric Holder, 44 years ago, was an armed black militant, holding off everybody from doing what they're supposed to do, and police were involved, and he got away with it.
That's a good comparison because it screams to all the different double standards that our country and society has right now. We've got nobody that has enough power to either eliminate or at least reduce those double standards, so therefore they go on. The citizenry, amazingly, seem to be okay with double standards as long as it doesn't adversely impact them. So if it doesn't affect me and mine, I don't care. In the course of human history, we have had that double standard come back and ultimately bite the masses at large in really, really horrible ways. So, again, I think right now we don't have enough people being adversely impacted by these double standards. That's the reason you don't have mass uprisings. The good news is that there was a core group in Ferguson who didn't like the double standards that were being applied by the local police force there in St. Louis County, and those were the residents of Ferguson. they believe that there was a double standard. One standard existed for the black community, and the other standard existed for everybody else. And I like the fact that they challenged that, okay? I'm saddened by the fact that all these outsiders came out and injected all this venom and this racial division in that community because the citizens of Ferguson were in the process of dealing with it on their own terms, on their own turf, and in their own way. And by all reports, it was being done peacefully until the outsiders showed up.
As it should have been. This is a problem for Ferguson to deal with. Not all these gang members and all these thugs that want to come in here and destroy their town. And as I mentioned last night, that's what disturbs me more than anything about what's going on. And we now have verifiable proof. Only 7 arrests came out of Ferguson from 163 or 168, I can't remember the number, I'll look at it in a second, that have been done since all this started. So, and the Ferguson people are sitting there and allowing this to happen. And that's disturbing. But what's more disturbing to me than anything is we have Eric Holder coming in here, and within 24 hours, everything has changed. Eric Holder pronounces to the world, I'm a black man, change is coming, and tells the whole world he's a victim of racial profiling, you know, and he doesn't tell the whole world that he's an armed black activist with a hidden agenda from 1970, 44 years ago, but it's okay to proclaim that Bob McCulloch, the district attorney, has to stop because he is not going to be partial because his daddy was killed 50 years ago by a black suspect. I mean, this is what's telling me. These double standards are driving me nuts. And you know, it's really fascinating because Will Hilton is one of the people Eric Holder describes as his closest friend and his consigliere, if you will, or consigliere, whichever way you want to pronounce it. That's how Eric Holder describes this guy. And Will Hilton verified everything from the 1970 story. In December of 2010, GQ Magazine did a profile of Eric Holder, and Will Hilton, his correspondent, went ahead and verified it and said, yeah, we took over the ROTC lounge and created the Malcolm X lounge. And one of the students that was with them, Steve Sims, was laughing his butt off thinking about it, you know. And, of course, that's a long time ago. But if you're going to go down that time road and you're going to try to be, you know, disproportionate about it, then you're going to be called on it. And that's very disturbing to me. You know, we've got to talk for a second because we had another shooting a few miles away from Mike Brown. Okay, now if you want to get into the situation that we have some serious problems with the double standards, if we have some mistrust of the police, you know, you can make that argument, okay? But let's wait till the evidence comes in. In this second shooting, though, it's easy to see why you would question the police, their version of events. Because in St. Louis, another gentleman was killed. It was 11 days after, I believe. Well, no, it wasn't that long. He was killed not too long after Mike Brown. But anyway, a black gentleman was killed by two white officers. Black gentleman went into a convenience store, grabbed some energy drinks and some candy or something, or some pastries or whatever the hell it was, walks out the door, throws the pastries on the ground, pulls a knife out of his pocket, puts it in his hand, looks at the cops and says, shoot me now. Now, after this went on for a little while, the official story that we've been getting is this black gentleman came towards the cops, and once he got within 3 or 4 feet of the police officers with the knife, that the police officers opened fire on him and killed him. At that point, you can call that justified. That's lethal range. And I would agree with that. I would agree with a justified shooting all day long in that. However, as always, there's more to this story. Now we have video out there that if I had to estimate this, Jim, and I would say he was at least 10 to 12 feet away from the officers, not in range to stab them with a knife when they opened fire. So that brings into question, you know, what is really going on, you know, with the tension and everything else. Why was this guy killed if he had a knife and they had guns and he was far enough away not to create a bodily threat immediately? Paul.
I saw that video and counted the shots, and I counted at least 9 shots from 2 cops into this guy. And
I think the official version is there were 12 shots. Go ahead.
I can believe that because both the cops could have been shooting at the same time, and that would have been lost. Police department spokesman stated that this 25-year-old guy actually had the knife raised above his head in a fashion where he was going to attack from overhead. Well, the video clearly shows that the kid did not do that. He didn't do it. So if the police department is not telling the truth about that, you have to suspect every aspect of the police department's version, every aspect. And what's amazing to me is that here we are, according to some of the reports, this location was physically something like either somewhere around 9 miles away from the Michael Brown shooting. What on earth was going through the head of these cops? What were they thinking? Maybe they weren't. Maybe that's the reason it happened. But here we are just a few days after the Michael Brown incident, and then they want to go around and draw their weapons on a guy who was, at the time that they first got there, was some distance away from them, more than 20 feet away, according to the video, more than 20 feet away. But they came out of their vehicle with guns drawn. Come
right.
on. Something doesn't add up.
And I have to agree with you there because, you know, and you got to understand, folks, we're talking about two different police departments. St. Louis County's police department is what takes care of Ferguson. St. Louis City were the cops involved in the second shooting. So, you know, for me, really, Paul, at this juncture, even the St. Louis City Police Commissioner or whoever made some statements after the Mike Brown shooting, that they weren't going to get involved in it. And now they've got their own shooting in a similar manner, with the exception of this had a weapon brandished, obviously. But I tell you, I wonder, and I have to wonder, you know, we constantly talk about post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. In the wake of what these officers have had to deal with, since the Michael Brown shooting, I don't care if it was 48 hours, 96 hours, or even today, over a week later, you know, are these guys, I mean, do they have that much anxiety? Do you think that them shooting this guy affected them because their minds just weren't right from some sort of traumatic stress or something? I mean, is that possible? What's going on with the officers here? Do they not have stress training? I'm just asking, you know.
No, I think that's a great question because when the cops end up going and testifying against individuals, they have their credentials and their training questioned a lot by the defense attorneys. And to the person, almost every one of them will say either, no, I didn't get that type of training. I was there because they needed a body. Or, no, I'm well-versed in that. I've received a lot of training. Now, this is it started off as a garden variety encounter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Garden variety encounter in the case of the second guy in St. Louis. So, Ed, my question would be, if it started off as a garden variety encounter, why did the two officers not use the training that we know that they received? Or did they automatically, for whatever reason, revert to their Barney Fife mentality and just draw their weapon as soon as they exited the vehicle, and they were intent on something? Were they intent on killing the guy? I don't think that they intended when they left the vehicle to kill the guy. But part of training is learning to distinguish between a real threat
mm-hmm.
versus a threat that can be defused. That's part of police training these days. These guys, if they did the defusing, it was unbelievably short. Unbelievably short, because the man was dead, according to one news report, within 30 seconds of these guys exiting their vehicle. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Something else I noticed too in the video, that these two cops could have used their vehicle as a shield, because they were strategically positioned. They could have put the now dead guy between them and the now dead guy, but they chose not to. They chose to stand your ground, if you will. Again, Ed, I have to question the training. Okay, I have to question the training. I really do.
I think that's going to be the basis of the lawsuits. There's going to be lawsuits involved all the way around in both situations. And I think that'll be the basis of the lawsuits, questioning the training and everything else. You know, I mean, you have to have conflict resolution training. And I think when you react to that quickly, you either have a short fuse or you know, you've got fear. You're scared. And in either case, cops are supposed to be trained to handle that. The Michael Brown shooting, in my opinion, was justifiable, just based on the available evidence. And I admit that I don't have any more evidence than anybody else. I wasn't there. You know, so we're all relying on the published reports. But based on the reports that I've seen so far, I can't see where you know, Officer Wilson or, you know, what should have, you know, just stood there and took a bum rush. He'd already been beat the hell out of, according to reports. But the second shooting greatly disturbs me. And what really disturbs me more is exactly what's going on with these officers. I don't think that they – I know many officers, and I know most damn cops are good damn cops. You know, they don't go out there every day looking to kill somebody, but they have to live with that fear every day. And that's a very, very stressful position in a normal situation. So I'm wondering if these guys, you know, even though, you know, they were wrong and it proved to be what the video shows, and there wasn't more to it than that, they deserve to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law based on what we can see from available evidence today. And I would agree with that. You know, but I think that right now things have gotten to the point in St. Louis, you know, these cops are so stressed out that they really need to bring in counselors or psychologists or something. And not only do they need training with conflict resolution and stuff, but in my honest opinion, when you have to deal with that kind of a volatile situation, you know, you're 3 or 4 miles away, you know, Ferguson borders on St. Louis, you know, so these guys are having to watch this every single night. You know, it's got to take a toll on you. It has to create some traumatic stress. PTSD is not just limited to soldiers in a war, folks. You can suffer PTSD from anything. Trauma is trauma. And I think that that's what we're seeing from this second shooting is a buildup of emotion and some sort of trauma. I'm not excusing the officers. I think the officers should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law if they're found guilty. They really should. Let justice take its course. But it is a concern, Paul. I think that that's something nobody is really looking at right now. They're so busy trying to blame somebody. We're not looking at the failures all around of what's been going on. And I tell you, one of the reasons we don't look at the failures all around is, you know, attitude from people reflects leadership. You know, when you deal with any group of people, their attitude reflects leadership, period. That's why you have followers, and that's why you have leaders. And I get very concerned with that. We have Eric Holder sitting out there playing the race card every chance he gets, and has been since he took that office, folks. I mean, you know, we had so many signs of this. The Black Panther Party intimidating white voters, letting white voters vote at polling places. No charges brought about. All the daggone, you know, situations we have around this country with voter fraud and everything else. Every situation, fast and furious, all of these things are very, very disturbing. And speaking of fast and furious, under Eric Holder, the Justice Department has refused Congress any opportunity to look at documents or anything else over Operation Fast and Furious. A federal judge has now ordered the Justice Department to provide Congress with all the documents that they've been asking for forever. They have until October the 1st to produce the list of these documents to the House Oversight Government Reform Committee. You know, the Justice Department is still trying to play, you know, confidential crap. President Obama invoked executive privilege in order to try to keep them from being disclosed and to protect Eric Holder. You know, you look at all of these things, and a federal judge finally ruled that, no, we're sorry, you can't do this. You're going to give this information up. So we're thankful for that. I'm sure it's not done yet, but it's at least a step in the right direction. And something else, when we talk about leadership, another story coming out today, National Review. You know, according to the National Review story, you know, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, remember, this is a, you know, part of the legislative branch here, okay? The Government Accountability Office reported today that President Obama violated a clear and unambiguous law when he released 5 Guantanamo Bay detainees for Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. He violated the law, violated Section 8111. The Department of Defense violated Section 8111. Because they did not notify any congressional committees or anything else. They didn't involve them. They didn't involve Congress at all. They just went ahead and gave up 5 of these Guantanamo Bay terrorists for an Army sergeant who, for all intents and purposes, most people consider a deserter. I'm one of them. And they've said that Obama illegally did that. So we have to look at this. Why did he illegally give up five terrorists for an Army deserter, and then try to say that, you know, it was okay to do that? So there is nothing here that he has done that has been leadership other than violate the law. And I tell you, it's very disturbing, because here we have Bo Bergdahl, Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, who voluntarily left his post and deserted. And there were five Guantanamo terrorists given up for him. And then we've got journalist James Foley. Journalist James Foley was beheaded. There is a video of this going out on YouTube and all around the internet. I will tell you right now, the video is disturbing as hell. I watched it, and I could not deal with it. It is disgusting. It's disturbing. But journalist James Foley was killed by these terrorists, beheaded. He went missing in northern Syria in November of 2012, and they just recently beheaded him. Of course, though, the video could be older than that. Who knows? But this is what we're going. This is what we're dealing with Hamas and all these other damn people in Iraq. This is disturbing. But nobody was working for him, because we don't negotiate with terrorists. We don't negotiate with terrorists in the United States of America. So we let a journalist be beheaded, and we let an Army deserter get freed by giving up five terrorists. This is another example of failed leadership. Remember, attitude reflects leadership. So we've got a racist attorney general, in my opinion, going around promoting racism. The Barack Obama administration is allowing that to go on. He's done everything he can to protect Eric Holder from the Fast and Furious scandal. He goes out here and gives up five terrorists for an Army deserter. And we have a journalist gets beheaded, and, you know, he's saying we're going to do whatever we have to do, that this is unacceptable in the 21st century, blah, 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 saying the right words. But the fact of the matter is, ISIS came about because of Al-Qaeda. It started out as an extreme wing of Al-Qaeda, and then even Al-Qaeda disowns these guys. And the world's not paying attention, or at least the American people aren't paying attention. These are the disturbing stories, folks. We have to start paying attention in this country. So I guess for a final rant, I'll leave it at that. Until you in America are able to wake up, come out of your damn shell, and pay attention to what's right in front of you, the evidence is clear. Leadership in this country is non-existent. Period. The end. I wish I could sugarcoat it. I really do. But I can't. The attitude of the people reflect the leadership that we have. Race problems in this country in the last few years have been on steroids. We spent years, decades, trying to overcome this garbage, racist mindset from the smallest minds and weakest minds among us American people, based on a skin color. How pathetic can you base any decision about somebody on a skin color? That's awful. But we have an administration who actively has pursued racism in every area they can. And we wonder why. We wonder why people start falling back into that mindset. There shouldn't be a question why. If you want better results in this country, change your leadership. It doesn't have to be a white president. It has to be somebody with some forethought and some morals and some values and some ethics and integrity. That's certainly not a Hillary Clinton. It doesn't have to be a Republican. I don't care if there's a party involved in the next president. I don't care what's behind their name. I vote people, not the party, but I vote. I research the people I'm going to vote for so I know who I'm voting for. I would never, ever put my faith and trust into the likes of Barack Obama and Eric Holder. Not because they're black. It's because they're racist and dumb as rocks. All they want is their own power and glorification. And if there's anything I can say to hopefully make you believe, even the people in Ferguson, Missouri, kicked Jesse Jackson out on his tail. They realized he was nothing but a race hustler there for money and power and ego. For some reason, they haven't done the same thing to Al Sharpton. He must be changing his game these days. But the reality is, there's two people in this country, two types of people, I should say, that are destroying black America and promoting the racist attitudes in us all, regardless of if you're black or white, as part of the Democratic agenda to keep in power. The Democrats are the ones who promote the racism. They're the ones who have profited at the race hustlers and baiters, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and their like. They're the ones who are out there profiting from the misery of the people that they purport to represent. When you can face that reality and then turn away from watching mainstream news and start spending your time online, like at LouisvillePolitics.com and the alternate news sources who are bringing you the whole story, bringing you the truth, or certainly tell you a hell of a lot more than mainstream media ever did. Quit watching CNN. Quit watching MSNBC. Quit watching Fox News. See how quick they turn around and start reporting everything instead of just picking and choosing what they want for a preconceived event. When you take money out of the rich and powerful's pocket, that's when they make changes. So quit empowering the liberal agenda. Quit empowering the race baiters. Quit empowering the mainstream media. And you can do that by empowering yourself. That's my opinion. Why? Because my view matters. And so does yours. Take care, folks. We will see you on Monday. Do not forget our great friend Ken Moman on Sunday night at 7 o'clock with his unique brand of Liberty Unbridled. And I will see you guys on Monday night, same time, same channel. Have a great weekend, folks. Take care.